Thursday, October 26, the Mexicans came to Washington, President and Mrs. Díaz Ordaz. It was one of the star state visits of our time here. I was up early and working with Linda and Bess on our guest list. I'm so looking forward to Linda Bird's parties, enjoying all the fun that other people have worked to produce, the dictated and signed mail, and then at 12 o'clock, in my bright red Marquise coat and dress, went to Lyndon's office for the arrival ceremony. It was a brilliant Indian summer day, and the grounds were reasonably full of people. I had gotten the word to all my house guests. The big black limousine rolled up for the 37th time this year, I believe. Gustavo Díaz Ordaz emerged with Mrs. Díaz Ordaz. She was beautifully dressed in a pastel suit trimmed in fur and a fur-trimmed hat. And Gustavo Díaz Ordaz, I never see without remembering that charmingly humorous story he told on himself at dinner in Mexico. He said that during his campaign, his opponent was accusing him of being two-faced. "Now I ask you," he answered, "if I had two faces, would I wear this one?" It was a thoroughly disarming story. And certainly Gustavo Díaz Ordaz is by no means handsome. Several things set this state visit apart from others. One, the very real warmth between our country, between our family and Mexico. The big embrazos in any receiving line. The frequent burst of Spanish from guests are a real mark. And then the first family brought all their children. Their handsome bachelor son, Gustavo Jr., their pretty daughter, and her Lebanese husband, the Salim Nostas, their Linda's favorites, and young Alfredo, who's just 16, and Al, Linda, and Chuck, he a guest for the first time at a state dinner, were very much a part of the day. It was a family affair. After the welcoming speeches and the brief greetings in the diplomatic reception room, we drove with them to Blair House, a very abbreviated parade, the flags snapping briskly, large pictures of the two presidents on lamp posts, a moderate-sized crowd of the curious waving and clapping. It simply isn't possible for this town, so satiated with chiefs of state, somewhat cynical, to turn out en masse for a parade. I remembered our triumphant progress through the hundreds of thousands in Mexico City. We can't match them. And so it is wiser not to try. To Bess and Liz, I'd said, it would take Queen Elizabeth, newly married to the Pope, to bring out a really big crowd on the streets of Washington. It was only 10 minutes to Blair House, and there President Díaz Ordaz received the key. The last time Walter Tobrano will officiate at this ceremony, I believe, we said our goodbyes, and I was back at the White House a little past one and went up into the solarium to have lunch with Linda and Chuck and Tony and Matiana. It was my only real visit with Tony and Matiana. We talked about family, and I told them who the other house guests were. In fact, the old house is bursting at its seams. Tonight, the Perry Basses and the Don Thomases, Larry Temple, will share the third floor with the Tony Taylors and the Benny Baileys, who've been here for several nights. Sometime during the afternoon, we got word that Lyndon had invited Cantinflas to be our house guest, just saying you've got to make room. So we moved the Warren Woodwards, who are so close we could, down to Lucy's room and put Cantinflas in the new bedroom. Alice Brown had the Queen's room and George the Lincoln room. And house guests kept on drifting in during the day. I made as many calls as I could during the afternoon to welcome them. And Marilyn has her regular job of telling everybody about how to order breakfast and to get cars, to take a quiet tour of the house if they like, sending them a guest list well ahead of time, a hot tea or some refreshment during the afternoon. Marilyn approaches this duty with a fresh delight that I like. 30 years younger, it's just the sort of job I too would want. I had a brief rest and worked on the list some more. And then, a little past 3, I'd invited the Jacob Hershey's, my friends of the Mississippi Riverboat, to tea, and the Fleetwood Richards, who had conducted that one-day tour through the old 10th District to see grassroots urban renewal and Texas restorations, and Dr. and Mrs. E.T. Jimenez of San Antonio. He's a new regent on the board of the university, a schoolmate of John's from Floresville. The Lincoln sitting room, which used to be the press room up until Theodore Roosevelt's time, is getting to be my favorite place for these small teas. Cozy and intimate, its warm colors and Victorian furniture have been a happy setting for some good talk. When there's a state dinner, I try to get the people whom I really want most to share some time with, either as house guests or to come for tea in the afternoon or coffee the next morning. I want the visit to mean something to them and to me. Fleetwood told me the Lockhart renovation was going right along. At 4, I called a guide to complete their upstairs tour and went out to Jean-Louis for a shampoo and set. It took so long that it was 7 o'clock and nigh in a nervous rush by the time I returned to the White House, inspected the gifts and read the information about them, went over the guest list for one last time, and slipped into my long-sleeved white Molly Parnish dress, knowing at once that it would be one of the most eminently satisfactory I'd ever had. And a little bit past 8, we were on the North Portico, greeting the President and Mrs. Diaz-Ordaz, who this time wore a beautiful pink chiffon glittering with beads. I found myself watching for each new outfit she wore, all of them extremely feminine and pretty. She said they were all made in Mexico. I would not call them high style, but very womanly. If they were not women wear daily's cup of tea, they would certainly be husbands. We went upstairs with the family, the Nastas and Gustavo and Alfredo all smiles. Hubert and Muriel were there, and Virginia and Dean, Virginia looking very pretty. And there was a very big imbrazo when Tony Carrillo Flores came in with Fanny, one of the most popular ambassadors ever to be in this town, I think. The Morgans, in their very different way, I like a great deal also. He's quiet and intellectual. Does not have Tony's ebullience that embraces the world, but he's very high caliber. Our ambassador to Mexico and Mrs. Freeman were telling me about the ruins at Chichen Itza, where some very special excavations are going on between now and December 15th. Couldn't I come? How I would love to. I think I startled them by saying perhaps I could after the 10th, for I intend to disappear when the wedding is over. And Linda and Chuck came in. It was a glow to be introducing them around. With Mrs. Diaz-Ordaz, our conversation is mostly family, and there was plenty to talk about, weddings and grandchildren. Our gifts included an IBM dictaphone with instructions in Spanish, which I managed to turn on for President Diaz-Ordaz, and a scrapbook, pictures of the playground equipment in use in our parks and school grounds that Mrs. Diaz-Ordaz had sent us last March, and some needlepoint pillows of our southwestern wildflowers, so many of them native also to their country, and a special accent on gifts for the children, camera, radio, stereo, and a big Smokey the Bear teddy bear for their grandchild. They had brought us a picture of a little boy playing with a toy. The artist I didn't know. It had charm and pathos and a quality somewhere between primitive and modern. And then we were on our way downstairs for the receiving line. This is the first big dinner using both rooms, 190 guests, that we've had in a long time, and one of the most sought-after guest lists. The cabinet was well represented besides the rust. There were the gardeners and the weavers, and from the Senate, George Smathers, without Rosemary, is a great traveler in Latin America, and Mike Mansfield. Maureen had gotten sick in the afternoon, and that was when I had called Diana to take her place, and the Joe Montoyas from New Mexico. And the house was especially well represented, with Gonzalez and Roybal, and Kika de la Garza, and others whose districts had many Latinos, like the Dick Whites, and the Chick Cazins, and the John Youngs. The new Solicitor General, Dean Griswold, was there for the first time with his wife in a wheelchair. And it was interesting to see Price Daniel of Texas walking right next to Alan Chivers. I'm sure many feuds temporarily put aside for the evening. There were old friends, Tom and Nancy Mann, big Imbrazos all around, and Raymond Tellis, who welcomed us to El Paso as its mayor in the 60 campaign. And Tom Corcoran, at the last minute when someone dropped out, we'd ask him to bring Margaret Josephine. And Jim Farley, whose interest with Coca-Cola gave him a tie with the whole wide world. And from the staff, the Doug Caters and Walt Rostows, and Betty Furness with her new husband. And I was so glad that we'd been able to add the Burl Stugars at the last minute. My correspondence office is somehow never quite as close to me as Liz's, Bess, and Ashton's. And that is a lack in administration on my part. Arts and entertainment were very well represented, with the towering Renee Darnincourt of the Museum of Modern Art, and Polly Bergen with her husband, Jose Limon, Mrs. Vicente Manelli, whose beautiful jewels attracted the press no end, the Ricardo Montalbans, and actress Ella Raines, with her husband Colonel Robin Olds, colorful war hero, minus his Western desperado mustache, writer Catherine Ann Porter, the star of yesterday, the glamorous hostess of today, Merle Oberon, with her husband Bruno Pagliai. Linda spent much of the evening with them. Mrs. Meriwether Post's lovely daughter Dina Merrill, looking very happy with her new husband Cliff Robertson. But the star of the evening was Canteenfluss, and I loved what Lyndon said about him in his toast, that his popularity was such that if he were to run for public office in either country, he might retire both of us to private life. It is our good fortune that Canteenfluss prefers to make fun of presidents rather than run against them. Oddly, I never saw him in the receiving line. Later in the green room, he came up to us, embraced Lyndon, and we had a happy little talk. And I never saw him again, our phantom house guest in 324. They were old friends, C.R. Smith and Marlon Sandlin, and of course, the closest of all, those who were our house guests. When we had greeted the 190 guests, I took the president of Mexico into the blue room. Aida Gardner, who speaks Spanish, sat on his right. And next, one of the most attractive stage figures ever to entertain us here in the White House, Jose Limon, who danced the Moor's Pavan for the King of Morocco. He is at least my age, and that must be something of a phenomenon, to dance with the power and skill and beauty that he does in the middle 50s. Next was Catherine Ann Porter, who looked really very frail, white hair, very white skin, very pastel evening gown, quite unlike what you would expect as the author of Ship of Fools, which was to me an often cruel, cynical, hopeless sort of book. She seemed to be very interested in everything, but of very limited vitality, and right after dinner she came up to me, apologized, and left. Next to her was C.R. Smith, for whom I have the greatest fondness. And between him and Mr. Sheldon sat Honey Berlin, who looks no older than when I first met her. It must have been more than 20 years ago. One of the most warm, feminine, glowing people I know. Tony Carrillo Flores sat on my left, which made my evening. I believe someday he will be president of Mexico. And then Mrs. Montoya. Not that we need a Spanish-speaking person next to him. He can communicate in English quite as well as in Spanish, and he's the sort of person who doesn't really need a language to communicate. It was a good table, a lively evening, a brilliant guest list, glamorous women, and later, loud and lively and successful entertainment. Lyndon's toast was humorous and full of warmth, and he spoke of something that is one of the real pluses of this decade to me, of the development in Mexico, in Chapinga, partly financed by the Rockefeller Foundation, of a remarkable new strain of wheat, which can produce more than twice the crop from the same amount of land, and which, best of all, the Mexicans are exporting to underdeveloped countries, Pakistan and India, now being tested for Turkey and Iran and Afghanistan. They've concluded some of the largest international sales of seed wheat ever in any country. And so, plagued as this era is with wars and frustrations, we do make some steps forward. Alas, President Dias Ordaz's speech was much too long, 25 minutes. The strolling strings added their own special lift and spirit to the evening, played among other things, Cielito Linda, the Mexican hat dance. We had coffee and liqueurs in the red room, and I introduced as many of the after-dinner guests, especially the press ladies, to the president or Mrs. Diaz-Ordaz as I could. I always try especially to introduce members of our own staff when we're within hailing distance of them. And then we went in to hear Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. With his big smile, I could tell it was an especial favorite with Alfredo. I think it's one of the most popular entertainments we've ever had. There was much foot tapping and that electric ripple of response from the audience. Linda had introduced them with a delightful, girlish little speech. To me, one of the most interesting moments of the evening was when President Diaz-Ordaz spoke of his predecessor, Lopez Mateos, who now lies in a coma, hopelessly ill. He had never mentioned him before in my presence on any of our other visits. There is something between them, I do not know what it is. But now, at death's door, it no longer matters. We've been talking of the writer, B. Traven, whose identity is a mystery. Yes, he, Diaz-Ordaz, did know the story, that this mysterious writer might indeed have been Lopez Mateos himself, or perhaps his sister, who was actually listed as his agent. She died, and with it, the works of B. Traven ceased to reach the market. One of the high moments of the evening to me was when Herb Alpert broke into the wild, tumultuous Zorba the Greek.
When the entertainment was over, the president and Mrs. Diosdado's made their way rather quickly to their limousine. We accompanied them to the door. And then, back inside, I spent a few minutes seeking out friends and chatting with them. And by 12:30, was upstairs myself, having sent word to all our house guests, the Perry Basses and the Billy Baileys and the Don Thomases and the Tony Taylors, George and Alice, and Woody and Mary Ellen to meet us on the second floor for a nightcap. And here, alas, is where I get D minus as a hostess. I forgot Canteenfluss. I rather think he will be grateful for my forgetting. So maybe it was partly Freudian, but at any rate, I shouldn't have done it. We talked to the dinner of Texas, of things serious and light. I remember at one point Lennon was explaining something about the bombing in North Vietnam, and he said, "We keep 600,000 men busy repairing what our 400 bombers have taken out. That is a good trade." He has a talent for putting complicated things into a simple sentence. I only wish he reached the 200 million of them with those simple, vivid pictures. We do so many things well in this administration, but as a propagandist, I can't give us the highest rating. We said goodnight to our house guests at 1:45, but it was 1:45 before Lyndon laid down the last of his night reading and turned off the light.